page 116. They sat in a half circle and began to talk of many things. It would not be long before the suitors came. Okonkwo brought out his snuff bottle and offered it to Ogbuefi Esenwa, who sat next to him. Esenwa took it, tapped it on his kneecap, rubbed his left palm on his body to dry it, before tipping a little snuff into it. His actions were deliberate, and he spoke as he performed them. I hope our in-laws will bring many pots of wine. Although they come from a village that is known for being close-fisted, they ought to know that Akuike is the bride for a king. They dare not bring fewer than 30 pots, said Okonkwo. I shall tell them my mind if they do. At that moment, Obierika's son, Maduka, led out the giant goat from the inner compound for his father's relatives to see. They all admired it and said that that was the way things should be done. The goat was then led back to the inner compound. Very soon after, the in-laws began to arrive. Young men and boys in single file, each carrying a pot of wine, came first. Obierika's relatives counted the pots as they came. 20, 25. There was a long break, and the hosts looked at each other as if to say, I told you. Then more pots came. 30, 35, 40, 45. The hosts nodded in approval and seemed to say, now they are behaving like men. Altogether, there were 50 pots of wine. After the pot-bearers came Ibe, the suitor, and the elders of his family. They sat in a half-moon, thus completing a circle with their hosts. The pots of wine stood in their midst. Then the bride, her mother, and half a dozen other women and girls emerged from the inner compound and went round the circle, shaking hands with all. Page 117. The bride's mother led the way, followed by the bride and the other women. The married women wore their best cloths, and the girls wore red and black waist beads and anklets of brass. When the women retired, Obierika presented kola nuts to his in-laws. His eldest brother broke the first one. Life to all of us, he said as he broke it, and let there be friendship between your family and ours. The crowd answered, yea. We are giving you our daughter today. She will be a good wife to you. She will bear you 9 sons like the mother of our town. Ay! The oldest man in the camp of the visitors replied, it will be good for you and it will be good for us. Ay! This is not the first time my people have come to marry your daughter. My mother was one of you. Ay! And this will not be the last, because you understand us and we understand you. You are a great family. Ay! Prosperous men and great warriors. He looked in the direction of Okonkwo. Your daughter will bear us sons like you. Ay! The kola was eaten, and the drinking of palm wine began. Groups of 4 or 5 men sat round with a pot in their midst. Page 118. As the evening wore on, food was presented to the guests. There were huge bowls of fufu and steaming pots of soup. There were also pots of yam pottage. It was a great feast. As night fell, burning torches were set on wooden tripods, and the young men raised a song. The elders sat in a big circle, and the singers went round, singing each man's praise as they came before him. They had something to say for every man. Some were great farmers, some were orators who spoke for the clan. Okonkwo was the greatest wrestler and warrior alive. When they had gone round the circle, they settled down in the center, and girls came from the inner compound to dance. At first, the bride was not among them. But when she finally appeared, holding a cock in her right hand, a loud cheer rose from the crowd. All the other dancers made way for her. She presented the cock to the musicians and began to dance. Her brass anklets rattled as she danced, and her body gleamed with cam wood in the soft yellow light. The musicians, with their wood, clay, and metal instruments, went from song to song, and they were all gay. They sang the latest song in the village. If I hold her hand, she says, don't touch. If I hold her foot, she says, don't touch. But when I hold her waist beads, she pretends not to know. Page 119. The night was already far spent when the guests rose to go, taking their bride home to spend 7 market weeks with her suitor's family. They sang songs as they went, and on their way they paid short courtesy visits to prominent men like Okonkwo before they finally left for their village. Okonkwo made a present of 2 cocks to them. Page 120, Chapter 13. Go, didi, go, go, digo. Digo, go, digo. It was the Ekwe talking to the clan. One of the things every man learned was the language of the hollowed-out wooden instrument. Dim, 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 boomed the cannon at intervals. The first cock had not crowed, and Umuofia was still swallowed up in sleep and silence when the Ekwe began to talk, and the cannon shattered the silence. Men stirred on their bamboo beds and listened anxiously. Somebody was dead. The cannon seemed to rend the sky. Di-go-go-di-go-di-di-go-go floated in the message-laden night air. The faint and distant wailing of women settled like a sediment of sorrow on the earth. Now and again, a full-chested lamentation rose above the wailing whenever a man came into the place of death. He raised his voice once or twice in manly sorrow, and then sat down with the other men, listening to the endless wailing of the women and the esoteric language of the Ekwe. Now and again, the cannon boomed. The wailing of the women would not be heard beyond the village, but the Ekwe carried the news to all the 9 villages and even beyond. It began by naming the clan. Umuofia Obodo Dike, the land of the brave. Page 121. Umuofia Obodo Dike. Umuofia Obodo Dike. It said this over and over again, and as it dwelt on it, anxiety mounted in every heart that heaved on a bamboo bed that night. Then it went nearer and named the village. Iguedo of the Yellow Grinding Stone. It was Okonkwo's village. Again and again, Iguedo was called and men waited breathlessly in all the 9 villages. At last the man was named, and people sighed, "Ugh, Ezeudu is dead." A cold shiver ran down Okonkwo's back as he remembered the last time the old man had visited him. "That boy calls you father," he had said. "Bear no hand in his death." Ezeudu was a great man, and so all the clan was at his funeral. The ancient drums of death beat, guns and cannon were fired, and men dashed about in frenzy, cutting down every tree or animal they saw, jumping over walls and dancing on the roof. It was a warrior's funeral, and from morning till night, warriors came and went in their age groups. They all wore smoked raffia skirts, and their bodies were painted with chalk and charcoal. Now and again, an ancestral spirit, or Egwugwu, appeared from the underworld, speaking in a tremulous, unearthly voice, and completely covered in raffia. Some of them were very violent, and there had been a mad rush for shelter earlier in the day, when one appeared with a sharp machete, and was only prevented from doing serious harm by 2 men who restrained him with the help of a strong rope tied round his waist. Sometimes he turned round and chased those men, and they ran for their lives. But they always returned to the long rope he trailed behind. Page 122. He sang in a terrifying voice that Ikwinsu, or evil spirit, had entered his eye. But the most dreaded of all was yet to come. He was always alone and was shaped like a coffin. A sickly odor hung in the air wherever he went, and flies went with him. Even the greatest medicine men took shelter when he was near. Many years ago, another Egwugwu had dared to stand his ground before him, and had been transfixed to the spot for 2 days. This one had only one hand, and it carried a basket full of water. But some of the Igwugwu were quite harmless. One of them was so old and infirm that he leaned heavily on a stick. He walked unsteadily to the place where the corpse was laid, gazed at it a while, and went away again to the underworld. The land of the living was not far removed from the domain of the ancestors. There was coming and going between them, especially at festivals, and also when an old man died, because an old man was very close to the ancestors. A man's life from birth to death was a series of transition rites which brought him nearer and nearer to his ancestors. Izewudu had been the oldest man in his village, and at his death there were only 3 men in the whole clan who were older, and 4 or 5 others in his own age group. Whenever one of these ancient men appeared in the crowd to dance unsteadily the funeral steps of the tribe, younger men gave way and the tumult subsided. It was a great funeral, such as befitted a noble warrior. As the evening drew near, the shouting and the firing of guns, the beating of drums, and the brandishing and clanging of machetes increased. Page 123. Izewudu had taken 3 titles in his life. It was a rare achievement. There were only 4 titles in the clan, and only 1 or 2 men in any generation ever achieved the 4th and highest. When they did, they became the lords of the land. Because he had taken titles, Izewudu was to be buried after dark with only a glowing brand to light the sacred ceremony. But before this quiet and final rite, the tumult increased tenfold. Drums beat violently, and men leaped up and down in frenzy. Guns were fired on all sides, and sparks flew out as machetes clanged together in warriors' salutes. The air was full of dust and the smell of gunpowder. It was then that the one-handed spirit came, carrying a basket full of water. People made way for him on all sides, and the noise subsided. Even the smell of gunpowder was swallowed in the sickly smell that now filled the air. He danced a few steps to the funeral drums, and then went to see the corpse. "Izewudu," he called in his guttural voice, "if you had been poor in your last life, I would have asked you to be rich when you come again. But you were rich. If you had been a coward, I would have asked you to bring courage. But you were a fearless warrior. If you had died young, I would have asked you to get life. But you lived long. So I shall ask you to come again the way you came before. If your death was the death of nature, go in peace. But if a man caused it, do not allow him a moment's rest." He danced a few more steps and went away. The drums and the dancing began again and reached fever heat. Page 124. Darkness was around the corner, and the burial was near. Guns fired the last salute, and the cannon rent the sky. And then, from the center of the delirious fury, came a cry of agony and shouts of horror. It was as if a spell had been cast. All was silent. In the center of the crowd, a boy lay in a pool of blood. It was the dead man's 16-year-old son, who, with his brothers and half-brothers, had been dancing the traditional farewell to their father. Okonkwo's gun had exploded, and a piece of iron had pierced the boy's heart. The confusion that followed was without parallel in the tradition of Umuofia. Violent deaths were frequent, but nothing like this had ever happened. The only course open to Okonkwo was to flee from the clan. It was a crime against the Earth Goddess to kill a clansman, and a man who committed it must flee from the land. The crime was of 2 kinds, male and female. Okonkwo had committed the female because it had been inadvertent. He could return to the clan after 7 years. That night, he collected his most valuable belongings into headloads. His wives wept bitterly, and their children wept with them.